Welcome to Parents' Perspective. 14-year-old Elaine was ranting and raging. She complained that her mom treated her either like a toddler or an adult. My mom and I can talk about clothes or homework, but when it comes to dating and boyfriends, she treats me like a 2-year-old. And she expects me to take on responsibilities I don't want, just like an adult. The more Elaine's mom pressed the issues she felt really strongly about, the more her daughter rebelled, just like a 2-year-old. Living with teens is a time of adjustments and confusion for parents and teens. I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We are fortunate to be able to talk about issues of adolescence today with two experts. Dr. Carlotta Miles has been a child and family psychiatrist and psychoanalyst for 25 years. She serves in an advisory capacity for several independent schools focusing on child development. She has 3 adult children. Welcome, Dr. Miles.
Thank you.
Susan Newborn is a licensed clinical social worker with the Jewish Social Service Agency in the metropolitan Washington, D.C. area. She has 2 teenage daughters. We're glad to have you with us, Ms. Newborn.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Dr. Miles, what makes adolescence such a different period of development?
What really makes it so different is that so much is happening all at the same time. Never before in a person's life has so much happened after the first year of life, when a great deal happens and growth is doubled and one learns to be mobile and one learns to eat solid food, et cetera, et cetera. Well, this happens again in adolescence. There's a great deal of physical growth. There's a great deal of personality development. There's a great deal of independence that's newly found. And there's a lot of experimentation with all this newness. And it can go either way. The child can be very happy with the excitement of adolescence, or there can be periods when the child is quite down because they don't have real control over what's happening to them always. And they're learning judgment, and they're learning how to be different from their parents because it's also a period of separation and individuation. So I find them to be the most exciting children because everything is new to them, just as everything is new to a 1-year-old.
It's an adventure.
It's an adventure, and it goes on for years. And what we hope happens is that at the beginning, they go into what I call a tunnel. And when they come out, they're able to be free and on their own and accept responsibility. But while they're in the tunnel, it's quite an exciting ride for the parents and for the child.
Seems like they're learning how to fit into themselves, really.
They're learning how to fit into themselves, and they're also learning how to be different and the same as their parents. It's like cleaning out your attic. You've got a bunch of trunks up there, and all the things that the parents have taught them are in the trunks. But now they have to decide whether they want to keep them or not. So they go through each trunk. I'll keep this. I'll throw that away. I'll keep this. I'll throw that away. Now, some of the things they experiment with throwing away aren't always things that parents want them to throw away.
It's a little scary for parents.
Yes, it's a little scary, but I always advise parents to relax a little bit and be very watchful and be very close and communicative, but let the process take place because it's invaluable and it's necessary. It's not as if you're going to thwart it, even if you try very hard. So make it easy on yourselves.
And a lot of anxious parents, I would think, might worry that the stuff that seems like it's being thrown out is being thrown out for good, whereas,
yes,
as we know,
it's experiment.
There. Yeah, that we always say, Linda and I always say, our kids aren't done cooking yet.
One of the funniest things to me is that year after year after year after year, 13-year-olds have the brilliant idea that when parents are out, they can experiment with alcohol. And it comes down the pike like a brand new thought with every single group of 13-year-olds that I've ever known. And it's just a recurrent idea. What the idea represents is we can do something forbidden. We can do something mom and dad wouldn't approve of. And wow, they might never even know we did it. We might get away with it. These are all brand new thoughts, and it doesn't mean the children are bad. It just means they're starting to experiment. But if you've invested, if you've put a lot of things in the trunk, even if they throw most of the things out, there'll still be lots of things left.
Ms. Newborn, how do children go through adolescence differently now than they did a generation or two ago?
Well, a lot, of course, is the same, as Dr. Miles was speaking of, but there are some differences. Safety issues are very different for teens today. There is more violence on our streets. There are children going to school with guns. And because of this, more limits are being set by parents. And with those limits, teens have less freedom. And teens need freedom, as Dr. Miles was talking about, to develop and to become themselves. So one of the challenges for parents is to find ways to give teens more freedoms in a safe and structured way. Another thing that I think is different is the stress level that our teens live with. There's more divorce, family stress. If teens are going to college, the college application process is very, very different and more stressful. And our kids just do a lot more things. They don't go out for the day, and this is tied in with the freedom. They don't go out for the day as I did and was home by dark or home by dinner. Now, everybody's got to know where they are. Are they safe? Who are they going to be with? Do they have to check in? And so they don't have as much of the freedoms that they used to have. And one other very important thing is I think that our kids have less supervision than they used to have, even though we say they have less freedom. We all used to look out for each other's kids, and now nobody's really watching out for our kids. They are more on their own, and there are more dangers out there. If they engage in some experimentation, and it happens to be a sexual experimentation, well, there's AIDS. So the sexually transmitted diseases are now life-threatening possibilities. So all of these things really make today's teens a very different time and a very different experience from years ago.
Dr. Miles, how can or should parents prepare for their children's adolescent stage? Sounds like we need to prepare.
Yes, we do need to prepare, and I think the preparation needs to start really early. For example, I think parents should teach respect for authority early, because what goes around comes around. And I don't mean become a policeman in your household, but there is a big difference between parental judgment and the judgment of children. And you have to walk a fine line of giving the children a chance to think for themselves when they're little. But while they're little, they're listening. And so a parent can process a mistake, and a parent can draw a definite line and say, when I said no, it really did mean no. One of the things I don't like that's a trend right now, and we can maybe talk about it a little more between us, and that is the children's wish to negotiate. They don't want to ever accept a firm answer about a limit. And so I think one of the things that parents can do to prepare for the children's adolescence is to have boundaries and to teach limits and limit themselves as well, so that when this confetti stage takes place, when everything goes up in smoke and everything comes down in tiny little pieces and we don't know what the final art project is going to look like, we will have put in certain things that the child then accepts, like authority figures and what they have to say and what they have to teach and how they have to respect them. So that's one thing they can do. And I think another thing that parents can do is educate themselves about adolescence and remember their own adolescence. Try to recapture some of the feelings that they had when they were in this stage without, and this is very key, without reliving them with their children. But recapture the feelings of not wanting to be controlled, the feeling of wanting to experiment, the feeling of wanting to be different than your parents. And then the last thing is, I think that particularly right now, as Mr. Newborn has said, we need to teach our children from a very early age that it's all right to be different. It's all right to think differently. It's all right to dress differently. And you will still be an okay kid. One of the things that's happening now is that peer pressure, which is always there, and it should be there, peers become more important than parents. That's just a part of the phase we're in. But when you see everyone going over the cliff, you need to have something inside of you that says, it's all right if I don't go too. And you can teach that best when a child is 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9.
I like what you said about parents setting limits. And when I work with parents, a lot of parents I see want to be their kids' friends.
Right.
And I don't think it's a parent's job to be their child's friend. It's more of a teacher role, because what we want to do is have really competent adults coming out of our homes who can make decisions, who can choose the right way for them and not go along with the group when it's important.
Maybe we could make a difference about having a friendly relationship without being a friend.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Newborn, right along with that, what are an adolescent's biggest concerns?
Oh, they have lists and lists of them. They stay in their room and they worry about them. They stay on the phone and talk about them for hours, and now they get online through the internet and email and chat with each other about them. But to give you a short list, I would say they worry about what they look like. Do they fit in with the group? They worry about safety. They may not talk about it much, but they do worry about how safe they are in the world and the level of violence. They worry about sexuality. What is their sexuality? Who are they attracted to? Is someone going to like them? Are they going to have love in their life? They're ready to think about those kinds of loves other than their parents and their family members. And for older teens, they start worrying about their future, college, jobs, what is it going to entail? So they have lots to keep them busy worrying.
I have the unique experience of working with a number of privileged children. And one of the things that I've seen with privileged children is that they don't worry about safety and they don't worry about their futures. They feel more that their future is assured. And one of the problems that we have with affluent children is motivation. One of the scourges of adolescence is lack of motivation or lack of worrying about anything. It's just an attitude that everything will be fine. And then I think another characteristic of adolescence in general is omnipotence. They feel they can get away with it. And that goes along with that dismantling of the attic. You know, it'll be fine. You know, nothing bad will happen. I'll break the rule, but somehow nothing will happen to me.
I can get away with
it. The rules are not really for me. They're for other people, or they are to be broken. And that's where it gets very sticky with parents, because sometimes parents who themselves are very morally responsible are very upset when their child breaks the rule or breaks the law and isn't so concerned about it. But one of the things they do is to try to defy you. So whatever is important to you is probably where they're going to start breaking the rules.
Dr. Miles, what's the best home environment for adolescents?
I think a safe one and an accepting one and a loving one. Home should always be someplace where you can retreat to, where you are safe and where the people are concerned about you. And so that's what makes a child able to come home and tell mom or dad when they've done something wrong and they need their help. It's when you're too critical or unaccepting that the child doesn't feel safe coming home.
They need to know you care.
Yes.
There's a sense
and that
of,
you'll stick with them.
Yeah. A sense of security.
Yes.
There. Did you want to comment, Susan?
One of the things that I like to advise parents about things related to that is that when their child goes out into the world, also to let them know that they can call home at any time of the day or night for any kind of emergency, and the parents will be there, no questions asked, so that they can feel that if they get into trouble, not only is their home safe, but it's safe for them to ask for help from their parents.
Right. We used to tell our kids they could use us as an excuse. If some situation came up that they felt uncomfortable about, we used to say, just say, I need to go someplace with my parents
right.
that
or
night.
They won't or let me.
My parents will not allow me to do that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right along with that, Ms. Newborn, how can parents deal with an adolescent's peer group issues without seeming to interfere with his friendships? That's a tough
one. Going back to what Dr. Miles said, the time for teaching those values is when they're younger. So that by the time they get to the teenage years, I always like to think that I'm sitting on my daughter's shoulder like a little conscience. And she knows what our values are in the family, and she knows what's expected, and she may choose to do different things, but they're there with her. I would recommend that parents be available for advice when your teenager wants the advice, but to not go through the big lectures, which is so common when we're really, really concerned. We want to tell everything. Sometimes it's late at night. Sometimes you can find a moment and they will actually let you tuck them in, and you'll be surprised what they'll want to talk about. And when they're open, that's when you can give out your pearls, and they really will sit inside and sometimes be chosen and sometimes not, but at least you've had your chance to influence them.
You don't know sometimes that you really are influencing them until years later when they, again, cite to you something that you've taught them years before.
I think also pointing out some of the things at the risk of being unpopular helps, because they'll act as if they don't hear you.
Mm-hmm.
But they really do hear mm-hmm. you.
They are listening.
And then the other thing is making your home the center for the peers, welcoming them into your home so that you get a chance to see them and hear them. And those who don't want to be seen and heard by parents won't come. And your child notices that.
Ms. Newborn, what guidelines do you suggest for driving, partying, alcohol, those kinds of things?
Well, it would take a long time to go through each of those, wouldn't it? And parents are very concerned, and the issue is safety. So I would say, as a general overview, when you make your rules, you want to make them with the safety of the teenager in mind. One of the ways I think is most helpful to do that is the formation of parent peer groups, where parents get together in a community, can be within a school or within a church or synagogue or just in a general neighborhood, of kids of the same age to share information and talk about general issues like these. Now, parents won't always agree in these groups about how things are done, but each parent will get an idea of the range of the norms and be able to work with their child around issues and decisions. One thing that's very important is for kids to know, again, their values. You know, I think that parents need to tell kids that they have a zero tolerance for drugs and alcohol, and that consequences should be set up in ahead of time so that if your child does get into this experimentation and they are caught, because you can only deal with it if they are caught, then you have consequences laid out, and your kid will know what to expect when they make those decisions.
What about the parents who say, well, if I lay out the consequences, my kid is going to say, well, then you expect me to break the rules. You figured it out.
As Dr. Miles so aptly pointed out, the rules are meant to be broken in teenage years. But when kids don't know what's going to happen, they may make different kinds of decisions than if they do know what's going to happen. And talking about drugs and alcohol and driving and partying is not going to cause them to think about trying something they weren't going to try. It's being open and letting them know that you are on top of things, that you know what's going on. It's an interesting question that parents think. There's another thing that parents think about. They think that if kids are going to drink anyway, then maybe it's safer if I let them drink in my home and take their car keys away. Now, what kind of a message are we giving them if we do that? So there are all these choices that parents have to make. Kids act like they do not want any limits, they do not want anything, that parents should not control anything, but they need them. And they really do want them deep down, even though they say, go away, leave me alone, don't bother me, don't ask me any questions. They really are saying, please take care of me, please keep me safe. And if parents can remember that's their job, then I think it'll be a little easier to talk about and deal with some of these difficult issues.
Dr. Miles, what kinds of limits do you think parents have to set for themselves during their children's adolescence?
Oh, I love that question, because I think that it's comforting to parents to understand that when your child is an adolescent, there is an enormous suction that pulls you back into that phase. And you really have to guard against regressing and becoming one of the teenagers. Unless, of course, you're dancing or hiking or doing some of the wonderful things that they like to do so much. But you cannot allow your behavior to regress. And I think one important thing is don't use your child as your confidant. Don't tell them inappropriate things about your sex life, about your job, about things that are really adult issues. It overburdens them. They are the children. You are the parent. So I think you have to remind yourself about that all the time, all the time, all the time, because of that huge suction that pulls you back and makes you think you're one of them. If you need help, get it from other parents, get it from a professional, get it from a friend, get it from your parents, but don't turn your child into your confidant, because then when you need to return to the role of parent, the child won't let you. You've been equals, and now you want to play it both ways, and kids are very astute in picking up the cracks in the concrete where they can sort of get through the door. So I would say that's probably one of the most important things.
Ms. Newborn, what about schoolwork during adolescence? Since grades now count toward college entrance or job prospects, how involved should parents be?
It depends on the child. Clearly, if there's a child with learning disabilities, with special needs, that involves a lot of parent support and involvement, that should continue. But again, this is one of those areas that we hope parents will work with their teenagers on before they're teenagers, mm-hmm. when they're younger children, so that they can develop confidence and be successful at school. When kids start out in school and they are successful and they think they can do the work, they'll continue. It's when they really don't think they can measure up, we really don't think they can succeed, they really don't have hope, that's when they stop. Or they slow down, or they act like they're not really going to meet their deadlines. So I would say what parents can do to help is stay out of the way, but again, be available. That doesn't mean 2 o'clock in the morning typing a paper, but it may mean editing. It may mean taking them, if they're not driving yet, to go get supplies. It may mean discussing topics that when they are in the mood to discuss them, and lots of encouragement, so that they feel like they really can succeed. One very important thing that I should not neglect, and that is set high but realistic standards so that, again, they know your values and they know what's expected.
And setting the stage for their studying, help, you know, facilitating the studying with, you know, a quiet household, keeping the chaos down. You know, keeping the telephone off limits, all those kinds, keeping the television set cut off, creating the environment for studying.
Dr. Miles, what should parents treasure about adolescence?
Oh, I think it's such an exciting time, and I think parents should treasure the watching of a very exciting phase of growth unfold. Watching for the new young adult that will emerge at the end. And, you know, reminding oneself that this is just a phase, that it has a beginning, it has a middle, it has an end. And watching it with real interest, stepping aside from the constant challenges and all the other things, and realizing that this is probably the most exciting time, perhaps, in their child's life to date.
Certainly one of the things I think we all fall victim to is when we have schooling periods that begin and end, we sort of think, well, when the kid graduates from high school, well, he's cooked.
Not at all.
Not finished.
We didn't talk about when it's over. It used to be over at 21. My observation is that today it's really not really over until about 30, because the final two requirements are to choose what you're going to do as a career and choose someone to love. And those signal the arrival fully into adulthood.
And today that doesn't
and
happen in the
that's
teens.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It's pushed because it takes longer.
Mm-hmm. We appreciate our guests' help with the confusing issues of adolescence. Thank you so much, Dr. Carlotta Miles and Ms. Susan Newborn.
It was our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay.
We all feel a little bit more comfortable now dealing with these issues because of you. Our gift for caller number one on our listeners' poll will be supplies for a child's birthday party. Everything you need except the food. Call 1-800-791-8573 to answer the following question. What has challenged you most in raising an adolescent?
We'd like to send you the free party supplies, so call us at 1-800-791-8573. For other comments or questions, you can also reach Parents Perspective through your local station or by email at parentspur@aol.com. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.